This week, the Rascals mint about Chicago's gun violence, Trump's flip on Iraq, and the question everybody's talking about, what is Aleppo?
Today is Friday. It is September 9th already, 2016. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, portions of which you can hear on my Saturday afternoon show on WGN Radio at 1:30.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the dreamy Chicago Tribune columnist who runs Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. You know, I use that adjective because I realize that no one has ever called me that and that the chances of that happening are diminishing every day. So if I didn't get it out now, the chances were going to be worse every week going forward.
I just kind of look forward each week to what is the adjective you're going to use to describe yourself. You notice you're still the only one that sort of sells that way, Eric.
I know. It's all about branding for me, John.
And each week it's something kind of new, so dreamy this week. Chicago made news around the world this week, closing in on or passing the 3,000-shot, 500-kill mark. Your colleague there, guys, John Cass, noted in the Tribune that as much attention as the 500 gets, 3,000 is maybe the more terrifying number. But for bad aim, he said, the number killed would be higher. That's 3,000 shots that actually hit someone. It doesn't even include the missed shots, the bullets in car doors and buildings. 500 and 3,000 are more than Los Angeles and New York combined. At its core, to me, this isn't a crime problem. It's an economic one. The shootings are the symptoms. But for now, Band-Aid time. Still, nobody wants to roll out the National Guard. Anybody got any bright ideas this week on what to do or think about all of this?
No, but I do think the numbers is making this issue bubble up more and putting more pressure on public officials. The city council is now talking about, and the mayor talking about, hiring more police officers. The police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, has talked about the need to strengthen gun laws in this state and says, you know, if he had the laws that L.A. and New York City have, he would be able to cut the violence in half.
I was listening to an interview with Bill Bratton, the outgoing police chief of New York, who also served in L.A., and he was talking about New York, but then about Chicago as well. And he said, you know, right, Chicago cops have confiscated more guns than New York and L.A. combined so far this year. But he said that the Chicago police force per capita is actually bigger than most cities, which is not something that I realized. And he talked about the gun laws. So when we talk about gun laws, what they do in New York, right, and what was the push here earlier was for longer prison sentences and mandatory time for offenders using a gun, right? Is that basically what we're talking about?
You're caught illegally with a gun as a felon, you get 3 years mandatory in a prison sentence in New York.
And that's why the superintendent says 70% of the shooters are known to them or gun offenders from before?
Right. We don't have a law that has a mandatory minimum, and generally I don't like mandatory minimums.
I don't either. But I think that.
But in this case?
Well, I think maybe you need to expand the sentencing guidelines for these judges to allow them to put some of these repeat offenders, these gun offenders, away for longer periods of time without necessarily ensnaring in that net people who are, you know, carrying a gun to protect themselves, and then they're, you know, they don't have the license or the serial number.
I mean, this is the conversation we were having in the 90s, right? The mandatory minimums led to all of these long sentences for relatively minor drug offenders, and that's what we're dealing with now. So,
yeah, but
that's sort of
a
warning about mandatory.
Right,
well, sure, there is. Well, hopefully there's a difference, but the mindset back then thought it was pretty clear that that was a good idea then.
Yeah, but
it's just
what Kristen says,
it's a good warning against mandatory minimums.
This is not such a simple problem because when all that locking up of people had its negative consequences for sure, but it also contributed to a drop in crime rate. I mean, there are paradoxes involved here, which is that, yeah, when we locked up all these people, we hollowed out communities, and we, you know, there were a number of negative consequences, but there were also some positive consequences in that, you know, the crime rate went down. So you can't just turn one knob, and that's one of the problems here. Obviously, you know, we always talk about these long-term solutions. We need jobs. We need better education. I don't know what the short-term answer is. Even some of these sentencing reforms, I don't know what the short-term answer is. How do we stop the number of murders and shootings go in the next 4 months? How do we bring those down?
Just one thing I want to say to your point, right? The murder rate in Chicago is much higher than it's been in recent years, but nowhere near where it was in the 1990s.
Yeah, which is kind of terrifying, too. But don't the ends justify the means in this, Steve? Like, if you talk about minimum sentencing guidelines, and it maybe was inappropriately applied to, you know, marginal drug users. So if they get out, they might buy or sell some pot some more. But that's different than somebody, you know, using a gun.
No, I'm not arguing.
The consequences are graver.
I'm not arguing against it at all. I mean, I think it might be a good idea. I'm just saying this is where we were, and we're dealing with where we were in the 1990s right now.
This legislation, though, came up 2 years ago after Hadiya Pendleton was shot and killed because, you know, she was this wonderful honor student who happened to get under a shelter at a park during a rainstorm, and she was mistaken as part of a gang. And her shooter had a previous record for unlawful use of a weapons, and he was back out on the streets. And the bill in Illinois got watered down where it was just going to be 1 year mandatory minimum, and they couldn't even get that passed because the Black Caucus stood up and objected and said, this is going to target our communities, this is going to target our constituents. They wanted to see something in return. And really, it's their communities who are being terrorized. So. Yeah. Why aren't we at least trying it? I don't understand. Why aren't we at least trying it?
It would racially impact them more than, I don't know, white kids in the suburbs or families. Can you imagine?
But the violence does. This is, I think, what Kristen's point is. I know she's here, so I can't channel her this week. Some of their constituents are going to get locked up in longer prison sentences, but many more of their constituents are going to be able to sleep better at night.
I'm not arguing with you, Eric.
I have a strong aversion to this idea that anything that might, temporarily put somebody in prison for a little bit longer. You can't just turn one knob here.
And I'm amazed though. Think if 3,000 people had been shot in the collar counties. Think of this as a DuPage and Lake County problem, or if it was someplace else, would. I don't know, the reaction be different? Would there be less tolerance of this?
You mean white people?
Yeah, I guess, sure I do, Steve, but also financially better off people, too. I mean, sure, I don't mind you saying that, but maybe it's a little more complicated than that, too.
Of course it would be different. We would have the National Guard brought in if communities like Winnetka were getting terrorized the way that some of these communities on the South and West sides were. Absolutely. We are so numb to this happening on the South and West sides with mostly black victims that we just keep talking about it. Oh, we should do this. We don't want to do anything so severe as to bring in the National Guard. Why the hell not?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. If that was in my neighborhood, first, I'd have a gun on the corner, and I think I would want a police officer and a tank there, and I think that's the sort of justice we would all demand. But you're right. We treat it like taxes. Like, oh, well, everybody hates taxes, but they're there. 3,000 people shot. That's insane.
It is insane. The argument against National Guard troops is that they're not really trained for this at all. It would be a very strange position to put them in. And also the optics of it, that the armed camp of a city, I think that's why Governor Rauner was against it and why Mayor Emanuel's against it. I think that they do need to hire more police officers.
Try it for a month and just see what happened. Pick those two neighborhoods, wherever the worst of it is, and just see what would happen for a month. Optics be damned.
Wasn't there a program maybe it's still going on, where state police were going around with Chicago police? Was that under Blagojevich? Or?
No, it was under the police superintendent who left, whose name is escaping.
McCarthy.
He finally acquiesced at one point and called in help from state police, I think in 2014. But it just kind of fizzled out. Right. He was not a fan of bringing in other law enforcement. He felt that it just complicated matters, and you don't want to be seen as weak and inefficient, and so you have to call for help. But it's just ridiculous. And I interviewed Adam Kinzinger, a member of Congress who's part of the National Guard, on this subject, and he said they could do the job. They could at least come in and do regular street patrols so that you could free up SWAT teams and rank and file Chicago police officers to be on every corner. They can do it. They just won't do it.
Do you also think this is a problem of the community itself? That is, it's not a problem for the mayor or the police chief to fix. It has to come from within. I don't know what they are supposed to do, but I, I think they have to own this and be part of the solution too. It's not just the police to fix.
The police superintendent has said that he can say this because he is the police superintendent and he is African American, and he is calling on parents in these communities to parent their children. He's been saying that all week, that there has to be some role for the community to be watching over these kids and making sure that, you know, your kid doesn't have a 9mm under his bed.
Related to that, but maybe not, I saw a story in the Tribune, and maybe this isn't as big a news as I thought it was. It's not a big deal, but the new Illinois law that will require driver's ed curricula to include what to do when stopped by law enforcement. I guess some schools already have this, but isn't that a good idea? As much as we should train you about, I don't know, speeding and stopping and turning, we should train everybody on here is what is expected by both parties when the police pull you over. This is what needs to happen. It seems like a great idea to me,
and maybe even expand that a little bit to talk about the ways in which one deals with police officers in general.
On the street.
And this isn't black, white, and Hispanic. I think everybody needs to learn, you know, what the best way to deal with police is. And I get bashed. I've done columns on this. Like, look, when you get pulled over by the police, you know, keep your hands where they can see them. And if you're worried about how they're going to treat you, you're worried about something, you think you've been treated unjustly, there are courts for that. You're not going to win an argument with a police officer who's pulled you over. You know, show them respect.
Yeah.
If you got a beef, take it up with a judge later on. And people's like, oh, Eric Zorn says you've got to adopt a fetal position in front of the police, and you've got to always kowtow to the man. Well, you know, that's the reality when you're dealing with these men and women on the street whose job is really difficult, who are trying to, you know, impose order, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But when they're wrong, you're not going to talk them out of it. You've got to follow other channels to do that.
So. I think I probably win the award for the most recent to have been cited by a police officer.
For what?
Just a few weeks ago, I was pulled over in Indianapolis, and I was very proud of myself for the way I handled it. You know, he came up to the window and he says,
you know who I am.
Yeah,
I'm Steve Bertrand of the Mincing Rascals.
I said, perhaps you've heard my podcast. I said,
and then you slipped him a 50?
No.
There you go. I'm in Chicago.
He said, you were just going too fast. I'm like, I understand. I, you know, gave him my info. He took it, came back, you know, with the ticket, and thought, well, this is, you know, I deserved it. I got the ticket. This is a very mature thing. They had a weird thing in Indiana where you have to go online like 2 weeks later to find out what your fine is.
Huh.
I don't know why that. It didn't say on the ticket. It said, you know, look up your number in two weeks.
If you're in a Lexus, it's a little more expensive, maybe.
$250.
Ooh, ouch.
I think I would have reacted differently had I known.
Were
really.
You in a construction zone or something?
No,
but
I was in
all of Indiana's.
But
a
the
construction
point is, Steve, that was your best chance of getting out of that ticket.
Actually,
was,
he knocked down some of my speed.
See, well, there you go. Yeah. If you would say, how dare you stop
how
me?
How fast were you going, Bertrand?
You
faster
for,
than I should have been
you
going.
Yeah,
for
no
me.
Kidding.
Well, in my defense,
I think 250 is telling.
In my defense, now, I was cited for going 70 in a 55, which around here is normal.
Yeah, no kidding. That's with the flow.
It was in an area that had just dropped from, I think, 70 to 55. So
tell it to the judge.
I might have been going 80.
But, you know, it's about de-escalation. I mean, if the topic is should we teach kids or everybody how to interact with the police better, the police are learning de-escalation tactics. They're supposed to be. But we should, too, because so many of the videos you see are where people are taunting the cops, are in their face, you know, and the cops are already frustrated by the scene. And so I think we do need to I think they need to have some level of expectation about how the general citizenry should behave. I think that's a good idea. I want to move on to the Donald Trump topic. So NBC hosts this ridiculous TV show that could have come from the producers of Trump's Apprentice, Commander in Chief, where contestants sat before an audience of veterans and spoke about national security. It was another form for Donald Trump to legitimize his lies. See, I wrote that out, so I wanted to make sure I got it. After all these events, you are supposed to go to fact-checking websites now to see if any of it was true. And the only winner is the TV network that airs these things. Let me ask you guys this. Should the Matt Lauers of the world interject every time Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump says something that's not true? Or should we just let it wash over with the understanding that that's the way they talk.
I think he tried to. There was a moment when he was interviewing Trump, and he said, maybe twice, Trump said something, and Matt Lauer kind of corrected the record. Actually, she came back later and said X, Y, and Z, or actually, you know. And yes, I do. I think reporters don't do that enough. They, we stand up with our microphones, and then we just let people, the politicians, get away with saying stuff that is actually not accurate.
In this particular situation, too, if it were a debate format, I mean, actually, you know, back and forth debate format, I think it's up to the moderator generally to, you know, let the opponent, let Hillary Clinton correct the record. That Donald Trump said, I mean, the thing that got everybody all exercised was that Trump said, I was opposed to the Iraq War from the beginning. And there's tape of him saying it's a good idea. And this has come up many times before. Matt Lauer ought to have been ready for it, and he should have corrected him. He should have gone after him. He shouldn't have let that comment wash, because there was nobody coming on after him to say, oh, but by the way.
Had Matt Lauer corrected every misstatement, there would have been no time for Donald Trump to talk.
That really is the point, Steve.
And I really mean that. I think this is the tale of two standards in one way, because Hillary Clinton has a long, defined record, so she has to speak to that and define all of that. Donald Trump has none of it, so he doesn't have to defend or speak other than a Howard Stern interview. So he can make up whatever he wants and say whatever he wants. So it was an unequal event in that way.
I think in order to try and quote unquote play fair, they think they have to challenge or grill Hillary, because we all challenge and grill Donald Trump. But I think that's a kind of false equivalence. Trump actually tells more lies. He's just more untruthful. And if you only corrected and criticized that, I think that would be fair unto itself. You don't have to now think, okay, well, we better beat up Hillary so we have equal space to the two. That's not necessary.
I think she has changed her story enough times when it relates to the email and the BlackBerry. And, oh, by the way, on Friday, more news came out, and she wasn't even questioned about it, about her aides actually using hammers to, you know, break up some of her BlackBerries. So, and the FBI notes that came out on Friday, you know, that they were scrubbing her emails after subpoenas from Congress had been released. I mean, she does deserve to get grilled on that. And she hasn't. She held her first press conference on her plane, or off of the tarmac of her plane. There's a story in The Hill about it. Not one question from the media about the foundation or the email, even despite all of this new information. She got like six questions on the race tightening, whether or not she thought she was getting, you know, unfair treatment because she was a woman. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So, yes, I watched the Matt Lauer Trump, and I think Matt Lauer was more direct with her than he was with Trump. He cut her off more. But she gets to skate in other arenas.
Okay, so one thing about the forum, I wish that it had been much more forward-looking than back. I didn't want to hear Hillary Clinton ask there again about emails or about her Iraq vote. I wanted to hear about the future, and same for Trump. So that disappointed me. Kristen, what you're saying is right, but that's one issue. It's a big issue, but it's one. And the thing with Donald Trump is it's almost every issue. That what he says is untrue or undoable or fantastical. Every issue.
Or vaporous, like his plan.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you my plan.
My plan is to ask somebody else for a plan.
You know, and I wish that Lauer, and I'm not criticizing him because it's, you know, everyone criticizes those people afterward. But, you know, when he's praising Vladimir Putin as being a strong leader, I wish he had said, is the same true for Kim Jong-un? Do you admire him because he's a strong leader, too? He's got control of his country, too. Does that make him someone admirable?
And his polls are through the roof.
His polls, he does very well.
I almost think it is you just have that head shake moment.
Well, that's the point.
Know,
so
yeah.
He says so many things that it's undoable. You can't
But the Putin stuff, that he said Putin is a stronger leader than Barack Obama, he should suffer for that, but he doesn't. But that's just an opinion. I don't know what Matt Lauer is supposed to do to correct that, Steve.
It's more than opinion. Well, you should say, well, he's a dictator. There's no free press there. Are you drawing equality between the U.S. and Russia? You know, Trump said he didn't really like the system, but
Matt Lauer rattled off like four or five things kind of getting around to that point with Putin.
Yeah.
He did. But I agree with what Eric is saying. Had you had an opponent on the stage, you toss it to the opponent, and she could have torn him up, and she probably will.
That's what I wonder. I think this should be a big warning for her when it comes to the debate. Because truth doesn't matter. Standards don't matter. You know, remember, too, that Lauer said, let's not criticize the opponent. And she did it a couple times. He called her on it. He did it consistently. Rules don't matter to him. And I think that, I don't know, I'm a little more concerned about the debates than I was before this forum.
I think that they're going to do this kind of thing next election cycle, it has to be longer. The idea that they're going to put it into a one-hour thing so it fits neatly into prime time.
I expected to sit down for 2 hours that night.
It should have been. I did, too. And then when I saw it was only an hour.
I can't do that.
And I kept watching the clock as I'm watching going, he's not going to have enough time to get to any sort of specific things about this world situation, the question. And I think we're going to lead into this about what are they going to do about Aleppo?
Can I say just one other thing before we move on, though? I think maybe the best question was unanswered but came from a vet and was very well formed. He said to Trump, he said, all right, you say you're going to get rid of ISIS in 30 days. Let's assume that happens. Then what do you do in the Middle East? Which I thought was a great question. But, of course, Donald Trump
and Lauer let him get away with not answering that one. That was true.
Well, the idea that I have a plan, but I'm not going to tell you, that the generals will give me one within 30 days.
And you take the oil.
Yeah,
and Lauer's like, well, how do you take the oil? You just take it.
It's
you just
vaporous.
Take it.
That is a good way to put it.
Ziploc bags. A bunch of Ziploc bags.
I want to play for you. Let's just play, though, and then we will leave this. But I don't even know that what Trump said about Iraq before or after the war matters anyway. And for context, when he appeared on Howard Stern's show, September 11th, 2002, the year after, it was just a chatty call-in. He said, boy, what a somber day. Then they talked about the real estate market and what business is like in New York. And it was an appropriate interview for Howard Stern to talk to the real estate mogul of New York. And then he said, is Melania naked right now? She's so hot. And they chuckled about that. And then
As you do.
Well, then, as you do if you're Howard Stern. And then it came to this.
We don't know the enemy.
I know, they're skulking around somewhere and you just feel like you're sitting duck.
But we have an idea who the enemy is, and a lot of times the politicians don't want to tell you that.
Are you for invading Iraq?
Yeah, I guess so. I wish the first time it was done correctly.
So that's it. That's his Senate vote, if you will. He's for Iraq. Begrudgingly, right? But, I mean, really, why does it matter?
Well, it only matters because he claims otherwise. If he just said,
yeah, right.
If he said, you know what, I didn't give a whole lot of thought to the invasion of Iraq before it happened.
It was a one-off Howard Stern.
But it matters because he's using Hillary Clinton's vote to do damage to her. So if she can say, you were on my side, that would take that arrow out of his quiver in an adult world.
Do you think it does damage, though? I think most people recognize that vote, I think there were only a few people, Bernie Sanders among them, who didn't vote for authorization.
You're absolutely
with the information
right.
they had at the time, it made sense. They believed there were weapons of mass destruction. I don't think Hillary Clinton does herself any good by saying, you know, repeating it was a mistake without adding that context.
Well, the other context is it wasn't a vote to go to war. It was a vote to give the president the decision to go to war.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's framed, it's like she's the one who sent the planes in the air.
You listened to Colin Powell.
I believed him, Eric. He was compelling before the UN.
I did, too. I have things to answer for, too, when I run for president about it.
You know, the similar situation would be Congress if they were ever to actually vote on authorizing force against ISIS. You know, that's been before them for a couple of years now. And then in 6 years from now, if it goes bad, you know, calling a senator who voted for the military authorization today, calling him on the carpet for something that goes bad that the president does. I mean, that's kind of a parallel.
Mm-hmm. Gary Johnson is the libertarian candidate who will be the alternative vote for people that don't want to vote for Clinton or Trump. You can't do that, so you have Jill Stein and you have this guy, Gary Johnson, who in some states is polling double digits. He is a sort of legitimate place to park your protest vote, people think. So there he is on Morning Joe, and they ask him this question.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, with regard to Syria.
You're getting it now.
And then he gave an answer, but it doesn't matter. Notice he didn't say, where is Aleppo? He said, what is Aleppo?
And he didn't give a good answer when he gave the answer.
Don't think so?
No. Jennings.
He gave an answer.
Ken Jennings, the guy who was a Jeopardy champion, he's on Twitter a lot, he tweeted, he says, well, At least he answered in the form of a question.
He almost says it like he thought it was a. He's like, "What's what Aleppo? Like, are you? Well, are you? Is this a bedroom routine? Yeah. What is Aleppo?"
No, John. If you, I mean, I was listening to it when it happened. I was actually at the gas station and I stopped, you know, jaw agape. I'm like, "Did I just hear what I heard?" And then his answer was, "Well, we need to hold hands and we need to join hands with Russia and we need to." I mean, it was clear he just didn't have. It's not why he's running. It's not his strong suit. And he didn't give a good answer once he realized what Aleppo was.
Well, I think he gave the Syria answer. Everybody has to have an answer to, what do we do about Syria? I don't think he knew that Aleppo was a city in Syria, that is, in fact, the epicenter of this civil war over
there. I give him a little credit. I think that he just had one of those brain freeze moments that we've all had where somebody asks you something, asks you a name of something that you ought to know, or... I mean, I do give him a little. I cut him
some
slack.
That's the charitable view, but he later said he doesn't know every city in New Mexico.
I didn't know where Aleppo was until last month. Really, when that little boy got thrown in the ambulance, that was in Aleppo.
That was in Aleppo, and all of the scenes that we keep seeing of children sitting in emergency rooms, and there was just another chemical attack. Where you had, 5 days ago, where you had kids, again, internet photos and videos of them gasping for air. You can't screw that one up.
Let me tell you something, though.
You're right. You can't. I mean, Kristen's right.
So this disqualifies him, Kristen? He cannot be president now? Based on that?
It sort of feels like a Howard Dean moment to me, yes.
A Rick Perry moment?
It's the one thing that people are going to know about him. It's the main thing people are going to know about him.
Okay. Two things, though. First of all, now a lot more people know about him. And he's getting a lot of play. I mean, you know, they've got a serious show on him.
You think he's trending?
I think he's trending. I think people are being introduced to him.
Oh, you better believe whereas Aleppo is getting a lot of hits right now.
But the other thing is, we talked about this that morning on WGN Radio, and I can read all the texts that are coming in. And an overwhelming majority of the texts were in defense of Gary Johnson. Hey, I didn't know where Aleppo was either. Hey, you guys, stop picking on these people. Oh, you're all in the bag for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, many of the people don't know where Aleppo is either, and they aren't as shocked by this as I think a lot of us are.
No, I mean, I think he darn well ought to know about Aleppo, where it is, what's going on there. But I'm saying that it sounded to me almost more like one of these brain freeze moments where someone will ask you, like, you know, what's your wife's name? And you just, like, all of a sudden,
right.
maybe not your wife, but, you know, something
you
like
that. You want
to
tell us that story?
Yeah.
Well, another way to interpret it, Eric, is, and I'm going to play two bites here for you. Kristen, let's play him asking that question again. This is bite number two.
And what is Aleppo?
The theory is the next day it comes forward that he thought that was an acronym, like LMAO, like it was internet speak or something, like... Aleppo is
the American League of
right. Is that stand Ernest, for something? And so because he didn't say where, he said what. So maybe he actually didn't understand the question itself. But just for the fun of it, it probably was his Howard Dean moment. And for those of you that don't know what that is, here's that.
That was William Weld when he heard his running mate make that mistake.
That's how Eric comes to the office every morning.
Every day.
That's my welcome cry. That's my welcome cry.
Really, but for one moment, you know, your campaign is forever going to be changed. I don't know that Howard Dean coming out of Iowa is going to end up being president any more than Gary Johnson is. But
I don't think we're going to see Gary Johnson's numbers go down much because I think the hardcore people who are going to support him are going to support him, but he needed his numbers to go up. With disgruntled Republicans, and I don't think you're going to see his numbers go up.
Well, but I think that his impact on the election stays the same, Steve, in that he's not going to win either way. But the question is, who does he siphon more votes from? Does Gary Johnson pull from more disaffected Democrats who can't vote for Hillary, or does he pull from Republicans who can't vote for Trump? And I've always argued that he pulls from Trump more, just because there are more disaffected Republicans in this election. So if this makes it hard for them to park their protest vote there, then that, you know, then that benefits Donald Trump. But I don't think it impacts either way. I still think him being in the race helps Hillary. I'll let you think about that. And on that, we close. Okay, let's do our recommendations for the week, kids. Something you're reading, consuming, watching, or
Steve
listening to?
Steve is raising
to.
His hand. He's raising his hand.
Bertrand, go first.
Just to follow on the presidential theme, since a lot of us will be moving to Canada one way or another after November, I'm reading a novel by a woman named Louise Penny. who I didn't know before, but she's got a recurring character. He's a detective or a police executive in Montreal in Quebec. And this latest one is called A Great Reckoning. And it's just kind of a cool, it's an interesting novel. It's sort of almost, there's a northern exposure kind of town in it with these quirky characters, but it's sort of very serious too. And it's nice to read about Canada once in a while. A lot of French. And I was just on her website because, you know, you try to pronounce the names as you're reading them. On her website, she has a pronunciation guide for her characters.
Oh.
In audio.
Nice.
So you can listen to
I would need
how
that.
She says them. So it's A Great Reckoning by Louise Penny.
Who wants to go next?
I'll go next. If you need to, you know, ignore your family for about 36 hours, lose a bunch of sleep, and cry hysterically, I would recommend Me Before You, which I think was made into a film, but it's my book club book of the month, and it's just a really, really well-written and unpredictable. I was not predicting the way that it was going to end, and it's about a woman who takes care of a quadriplegic.
JoJo Moyes.
Thank you. I knew you would know the answer.
You should do. I interviewed her on that book. So.
You did?
Why don't you follow
me?
I follow your podcast. You never follow mine.
Do you have a book podcast?
Kids, don't fight. Don't fight. Yeah, he does.
This is what he tried to tell the officer in Annapolis.
Well, you know, your introduction is about the business lunch. You need to throw in your
officer,
podcast.
Officer, I have two
All right,
podcasts.
I'll go next.
You're
I'll
talking
go next
to a
and
man.
Then.
You pulled over a man who has two podcasts.
I'll give you one.
My recommendation is Hell or High Water. It is the Jeff Bridges, Chris Pine movie. And I thought it was really surprisingly good. There was a very interesting scene in it, too, by the way, where he's robbing a bank. They're robbing a bank. But it's in West Texas, and everybody in the bank has a gun. And so when they turn around and fire a shot, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. You know, that argument about, well, if everybody had a gun, then we'd be able to put down the criminals. And the way that scene plays out, it's not that important to the movie, but it's a really interesting scene. Jeff Bridges is terrific, and my wife couldn't take her eyes off Chris Pine in this movie. So I'm recommending it, not for that reason, but because it's just a real good movie. Hell or High Water.
I'm recommending the reviews on Amazon of the 571B banana slicer. Have you guys seen this on Banana? Where people will...
I'm going to say no.
People will weigh in. They will have these really mundane products, and then the reviews will be hilarious. People will weigh in with these long, extended reviews of these extremely simple products. This is a little piece of plastic that has a bunch of little ridges in it. You push it down on a banana, and it slices is the banana. That's all it is. A little thing. And I just want to read one of the reviews here to give you a flavor of this. What can I say about the 571B banana slicer that hasn't already been said about the wheel, penicillin, or the iPhone? This is one of the greatest inventions of all time. My husband and I would argue constantly over who had to cut today's banana slices. It's one of those chores no one wants to do. You know, the old, I spent my entire day rearing our children. Maybe you can pitch in a little and cut these bananas. And, of course, you think I have the energy to slave over your damn bananas. I worked a 12-hour shift to come home to this. These are the things that can destroy an entire relationship. Got to the point where our children could sense the tension the minute I heard our six-year-old girl in her bedroom reenacting our daily banana fight with her Barbie dolls. I knew he had to make a change. That's when I found the 571B banana slicer. Our marriage has never been healthier, and we've incorporated it into our lovemaking.
Oh, I hope we're not slicing anything off in the bathroom.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know how that
works.
There's
hundreds of them, and they're great.
My son likes to read. I guess on IMDb, they have, you know, lists are viewer reviews of movies. They have viewer previews, so the people are predicting how they're going to feel about the movies before they come out.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's really funny.
That's Eric Zorn, the dreamy one with the banana slicer news.
Next week, he's going to be hulky. I think we're excited.
That'll be the preview part where we say, what adjective will Eric use next week?
He's writing it down.
Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. Thanks to our engineer, Bob Ferguson, who I think is still there. Kristen Decker is the producer. This is The Mincing Rascals, and we will drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.